This is All Things Considered from NPR News. I'm Michelle Norris. This holiday celebrates one notion of American happiness, coming home. Equally celebrated in fiction and memoir is the opposite transition, leaving home. In this section of our program, we have a story about picking up and leaving from writer Bailey White. Her tale is set down near the Florida Panhandle where she lives.
Ever since Charlene's mother died of Alzheimer's disease a year ago, she has been plagued by suitors. Charles from the furniture store, who came to deliver her new sofa and then didn't want to leave. Big Jim, who drops in to quote from the Bible about men and women. Larry from down the street, who comes over on his riding mower and talks about Mars. These men are not skillful wooers. They remind Charlene of big obsolete machinery, a cane grinder or cottonseed press. "Now, if you got anything big you want moved, I can come back after work," says the furniture man. "No," says Charlene, "everything is exactly where I want it, thank you." "And the Lord God said, 'It is not good that the man should be alone. I will make an helpmeet for him. She shall be called woman,'" says Big Jim. He stands there and stands there for so long that soon all Charlene can see is his new bleached white teeth and his new white tennis shoes glowing in the dark. In the morning, Larry rides over on his riding mower and offers to cut her grass. "I've got my own mower," says Charlene, but Larry won't go home. He makes himself comfortable on the seat of his lawnmower and goes on and on about Mars, how big and red it is. "You know what?" he says, as if he's just thought of it. "We ought to walk down to the lake yard one night and look at Mars, just you and me." "Thank you," says Charlene, "but I can see Mars from my own backyard." After she saw that movie, The Bridges of Madison County, Charlene used to think from time to time how nice it would be if a handsome stranger would come up in the yard one day, someone tall and distant with a slow smile and a mysterious skill. But about the time that movie came out was when Charlene's mother first started to wander off. If Clint Eastwood himself had pulled up in the backyard in a pickup truck, she couldn't have driven off with him. Her mother would have ended up at the bottom of Lake Despina. Now her mother was dead, and here are all these men greasing up the old rusty gears of romance, wanting to move her furniture and show her Mars. But Charlene was not born yesterday. She knows she's the same little dumpy lady she was before her mother died and left her over $600,000. She knows all they want is to marry her so they can plop down on her new sofa and put their big white feet up on her coffee table and order off after that Bayliner and Mercury motor they saw advertised on TV and put it on her debit card. "Tell 'em all to get lost," said Clarence down at the antique mall. "Tell him you don't need a man, thank you very much. Tell him to crank up that riding mower and shove off, buddy." It was a drizzly Monday in early fall, and Charlene was out at Clarence's antique mall, sitting in one of the cozy little rooms Clarence created out of used furniture, a camelback sofa, two wing chairs, a lamp, a worn-out rug on the concrete floor. Clarence was glad to have her. "People have no vision," he always said. "You have to show them everything. Just sit there, look comfortable. You are demonstrating the purpose of furniture." It was very peaceful in the antique mall on this damp Monday. There were no customers, just the intoxicating fumes of neat's foot oil and furniture wax, the soporific drone of the traffic on 90, and the little patter of rain on the metal roof. Charlene was just thinking how warm she was, how her back didn't hurt at all, and how she could almost go to sleep. And the next thing she knew, her head snapped back and her eyes flew open. There was a little crash and a cry, "Jesus, God!" A man stepped back from the shards of a broken cup, staring wildly at Charlene. He sank down in the wing chair and put his head down. "You scared me to death," he said. "I thought you were one of those plaster statues that looked so real." He put a hand on Charlene's knee. His eyes were wide and wild. "I'm so sorry," he said. "I didn't know you were alive." From all that peace and quiet, the little cozy room was suddenly a bustle of activity. There was Clarence with the broom and the dustpan. The man stood up and staggered back, not quite ready, and reached for his wallet. Charlene, in that state of confusion of people who have just waked up in a public place, wondered, did I drool? Was my mouth hanging open? Embarrassed to look him in the face, she watched his hands fumble out a wad of money from a pocket and slide off the rubber band. Flipping out from under his thumb, she saw the big old face of Ben Franklin, Ben Franklin, Ben Franklin, while Clarence held up both hands and said, "No, no, put your money away. It was just a piece of cheap blue transferware." "Let's just all sit down for a minute," said Clarence. He brought a pot of tea and some little cookies. There was an awkward silence, just the rain on the roof and in the distance a police siren headed west. "I'm sorry I scared you so bad," said Charlene. "I know that can startle a person when you think things are one way and then you suddenly find out it's something entirely different." "I'm just jumpy," said the man. "I'm trying to get to Pensacola. I haven't slept in a couple of days." He took a handful of Clarence's cookies. "I don't know if I'm sleepier or hungrier," he said. "What ails you?" said Charlene. "Why can't you sleep?" The man munched and munched on his mouthful of cookies and closed his eyes. He lolled his head back and took a deep, ragged breath. "Oh," he said, and thought a while. "I just miss Johnny Cash so bad, that's all." "Well, you ought to go on home and get in the bed," said Charlene. "You need your sleep." The man started to laugh and kept on laughing, not loud, just chuckling to himself with his eyes closed. "Honey, I just can't do that," he said. Clarence went over into another booth and started flipping through a box of records. He opened up the lid of an old record player, checked out the frayed cord, and picked a wad of dust off the needle. "I don't sell merchandise that doesn't work," he said. There was a loud humming sound, then the bump, bump, bump as the needle went round and round, coming up on Johnny Cash at Folsom Prison singing "Long Black Veil." There was a little scratch in the record that almost kept the beat. The man sat back in the wing chair and smiled. Johnny Cash sang, "The scaffold was high and eternity near. She stood in the crowd and she shed not a tear." "That's so sad," said Charlene, "to think he would love a woman who would do him that way." "Come on," said the man, and he shoved himself up out of the chair and took Charlene's both hands in his. "Dance with me." It was so smooth and unexpected that Charlene could not think yes or no. She just all of a sudden found herself slow dancing cheek to cheek with a total stranger to Johnny Cash singing "Long Black Veil." At first he went pretty good and Charlene could feel the music in the dancing, but toward the end of the song he'd slowed down till he was almost standing still, and finally when Johnny Cash got him to the gallows he was just standing there leaning on Charlene so heavy she felt if she stepped out from under him he would just fall right down. She led him stumbling backwards into one of the antique mall's bedrooms and sat him down on a little four-poster bed. "I just want to rest my eyes for just a minute, just a little minute," he said, and next thing they knew he was sound asleep, breathing with a little rasping sound at the back of his throat. There is something vulnerable about a sleeping person that brings out tender feelings of protection and care, not quite maternal. Charlene and Clarence looked at the man for a while and then went on about their business, each feeling the weight of that trust in his own way. Charlene went home and thawed out a casserole and cooked a pot of rice and got her best tomato off the windowsill. Clarence put up the close sign on the door and turned off the outside lights and went back to work oiling a leather ottoman. The man slept on and on. It got dark, the quiet early dark that comes to small towns on the eastern edge of a time zone. At 6 o'clock, Charlene came back with her chicken divan and a pan of biscuits and a steamed pudding. Soon the smell of food took over the smell of furniture wax and neat's foot oil. The man woke up in an orderly way. First he stared at the ceiling, then he sat up and stared at his feet. Then he looked all around the antique mall, and last he looked at Charlene and Clarence. "I thought you might want to get you a little something to eat before you head on," said Charlene, "but Mamie's is closed Mondays, so I brought you some supper." Clarence set up a little eating place at an enamel-topped table in a booth selling antique kitchen gadgets. How about this old buffalo china? Now, doesn't that look festive? Just don't tell Esther, he said. The man sat down gingerly. What is this place? He said. Is this some kind of a home? Where have you been? Said Clarence. You never saw an antique mall? Charlene piled up the plates with chicken divan and a slice of tomato for color. She felt a little shy, remembering the feel of his cheek on hers and the feel of his arms heavy around her waist, as Johnny Cash sang, "Been in the arms of his best friend's wife." She put an extra slice of tomato on his plate and stole a glance at him. He was sitting very still with his hands in his lap, staring right at her face. "Are you an angel?" he asked. Clarence laughed and said, "She is an angel." Charlene looked down and worried over her chicken divan. Was there too much salt? Too much curry? Was it cold in the middle? She took the first bite. No, it was perfect. She relaxed. Then it almost turned into a regular meal, three people eating together and visiting. Clarence explained the concept of an antique mall. The man explained that his car had broken down that afternoon, was in the shop, something in the transmission. "I can't make it to Biloxi tonight," he said. "Did you leave it at Axelrod's?" asked Clarence. "Axelrod has a good transmission man." "Yes, Axelrod's," said the man. Charlene asked him did he have a place to stay since the motel closed down. "We're not exactly a big tourist destination up here in North Walton County," she said. There was a silence. Then Clarence said, "You can go on and stay here tonight. Just don't steal anything." "You know," said the man, and he looked around, "I don't see a thing in here I need." He took an egg beater off the pegboard wall and spun its handle. "Vroom," he said, and he smiled at Charlene and winked as if it was a little joke just between them. That night when Charlene got home, she had a happy, reckless feeling. She hummed "Long Black Veil" as she washed the dishes, and instead of weary and polite, she felt irritated and snappy when Larry showed up at the back door. "I noticed you were gone a long time after dark and just got back," said Larry. "I wanted to check on you, see if everything's all right." "I've been out," said Charlene. Then she added, although it wasn't exactly the truth, "dancing." "Dancing?" said Larry. "Well, Esther called me and said she saw the lights on down at the antique mall long after closing time and rode by there and said she thought she saw you and Clarence in there eating in the kitchen booth. Said she thought she saw somebody else in there eating with y'all. She didn't recognize him." Right then Esther drove up, and then Big Jim came over, and they all came up on Charlene's porch and stood there as if their feet had put down roots. "What is Clarence thinking, having total strangers down there eating and drinking?" said Esther. "Don't blame Clarence," said Charlene. "That was me. The poor man was hungry, and Mamie's was closed, so I took him a little something to eat." "You sat down and ate with somebody you don't even know? A total stranger?" said Larry. "You cooked for him?" "Well, he was hungry," said Charlene, "and sleepy, so Clarence let him take a nap in that little four-poster bed." She didn't mention the broken cup or the long black veil or the dancing. She didn't tell him that he'd fallen to sleep in her arms and called her an angel. "What?" said Esther. "Clarence has got people eating and sleeping down at the antique mall. Might as well just shack up down there." Larry put his arm around Charlene's shoulder like he would do a child and talked slowly and carefully to her as if she couldn't understand English. "Honey," he said, "you're so sweet, but you just can't do that. Why, he could have been a wanted criminal." "He could have been on drugs," said Big Jim. "Did you get a look at his pupils? Was they pinpoint or dilated?" "Shot a man in Reno," thought Charlene, "just to watch him die." It was the second time that day a man had put an arm around her and called her honey. But how different it felt this time. Charlene twitched out from under Larry's arm. "He wasn't on drugs," she said. "He was just sleepy." I'm going down there first thing in the morning and look at my dishes, and if there's a single chip, said Esther. Wait, said Larry, what are we thinking? He bumped his forehead with the heel of his hand. He could be a terrorist. He could be going to hijack one of those jets from Eglin Air Force Base and fly it up to New York City. Did he look foreign? And I'm going to call Moselle and tell her Clarence is putting rank strangers to bed on that lovely ivory linen spread with a hand-tatted insert, said Esther. I may just have to pull out of that mall. There's more money down at the beach anyway. Well, what was he doing here, said Big Ed. Where was he going? He was on his way to Pensacola, said Charlene. There was some disgruntled shuffling around on the porch, and finally they all went down the steps and back home, mumbling and muttering, and Charlene was alone, just her and Mars, low and red in the sky behind her. When Charlene finally got to bed, she could not sleep. She lay there, squirming and flapping the covers. She kept thinking about Larry's breath, smelling like coffee and cigarettes and peppermint, and Esther's snipey little face and her shrill, fast talk. Let her take that tacky stuff to the beach, thought Charlene. Esther called it collectible. Clarence called it junk. Then she thought about the stranger at this very moment, peacefully sleeping in the little four-poster bed. She hoped he wouldn't get cold, that the lights from 90 wouldn't shine in his eyes, that the train wouldn't wake him up when it came through at 2:30. Charlene slept fitfully. In the middle of the night, she woke up with a start, feeling that someone was watching her, someone with a big face and a little sly smile and hair curling to his shoulders. Benjamin Franklin's face was on a $100 bill, she remembered, and that wad of bills in his pocket must have been an inch thick. Her thoughts came one by one, not crowding, but each taking its turn. Pensacola, he'd said, but then later, Biloxi. Yes, he'd said to Clarence, at Axelrod, something in the transmission. But Axelrod's was closed Mondays, just like Mamie's. Charlene put on her clothes and drove down to the antique mall. It had turned cold, and a column of steam rose off Lake Despin and spread through the town, muffling the glow of the streetlights. He was awake, too, prowling around in the antique mall like a cat. He let her in without a word. Charlene made up the little four-poster bed, smoothing Moselle's linen bedspread tight and checking for snagged threads. She stacked Esther's dishes neatly. There were no chips. The man just stood by the door, watching and waiting. Come on, said Charlene, get in the car. I'm going to take care of you. They drove west on 90, then turned north on 331 towards Alabama. Fasten your seatbelt, said Charlene. Once they got out of the reach of the mist of Lake Despin, it was a clear night, with the moon glowing on barn roofs and making shadows in the woods and silvering up the backs of Charlet cows in the fields.
Thank you. in a long black veil. He visits my grave when the night winds wail. Nobody knows and nobody sees. Nobody knows but me.
A story from Bailey White and music from Gordon Scott with Flawn Williams on Harmony. This is All Things Considered from NPR News.